But now, at 6:30, it's time for tonight's Opera on Three. It's introduced by James Naughty.
Welcome to the Royal Opera House for a performance of Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk by Dmitri Shostakovich, one of the towering achievements of 20th century opera. The story of domestic frustration, lust and murder was a daring enterprise for a composer still in his 20s and was an immediate success when it was first performed in 1934. But 2 years later, Joseph Stalin saw it and loathed it. Shostakovich was publicly denounced, and the opera wasn't performed again in the Soviet Union for decades until after Stalin's death. Meanwhile, it became recognized around the world as a masterpiece. Tonight's conductor, Antonia Papano.
Well, it's a piece that draws great directors. It's a stage director's dream. The characters are very, very clear. The timing of the theatre is almost Puccinian. It never puts a foot wrong. The music and its variety are such that the conductors all want to conduct it. A certain type of singers, real singing actors, are drawn to it. That amount of enthusiasm from the performers themselves translates, of course, to the audience. And now it's become part of the repertoire.
We'll hear more from Antonia Papano, music director, of course, at the Royal Opera House, during tonight's interval, and from two of the principal singers, Eva Maria Westbrook, who sings Katerina, and Brandon Jovanovich, who is her lover, Sergei. Tonight's Boris, Katerina's domineering father-in-law, is Sir John Tomlinson, incidentally celebrating this year 40 years of singing here at the Royal Opera House. Well, with me here in our box at Covent Garden is the cultural historian Rosamund Bartlett, who has a particular interest in Russian music and literature. And Rosamund, first of all, Tony Papano was talking there about the energy and drive of the piece. The extraordinary thing about this opera is its directness.
It is indeed an opera which really engages you from the first note. And Shostakovich wrote an article shortly after he'd completed the score saying, you know, what's going on in the Soviet Union now, you know, is a need to write operas based on the industrialization, and I need real human beings. I need to, you know, have strong emotions. And it reminds me a little bit of what Tchaikovsky said back in the 19th century. He said, you know, I can't be dealing with gods. He was referring to Wagner. And actually, I need real human beings whom I might identify with. So there's an awful lot of Shostakovich's own emotional world in it.
It was an amazing enterprise because he was only, what, 20, 24, 25 when he started to write it?
That's right, he was 24. He'd already got one opera under his belt, that was The Nose, heavily criticised. And so there was a huge weight of responsibility on his shoulders with this one. And he was the Soviet Union's leading composer already at this stage.
Rosamund, thank you. You can, of course, read a full synopsis of the plot in 9 scenes, which Shostakovich divided into 4 acts, on the Radio 3 website and the opera pages there, where you can also see photographs of this production by Richard Jones, which was first staged here 12 years ago. Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk tells the story of the downtrodden and frustrated Katerina, who takes the opportunity of her husband's absence to have a passionate affair with Sergei, a workman. But her father-in-law, Boris, whom she loathes, catches them. Katerina poisons him with mushrooms and then, with the help of Sergei, murders her husband, Zinovy. Let's look forward to Acts 1 and 2, which we're going to hear with a short pause between them. We heard Tony Papano talking a moment ago about the delight that conductors and directors take in this piece. The musical character of it is really quite arresting, isn't it?
It is. It's an opera which contains so many different diverse styles. You know, there's wonderful lyricism for Katerina, there is tragedy and pathos at the end for her character, and then there's extraordinary parody and satire and almost, you know, farcical tones.
And street music.
Street music. And don't forget that Shostakovich, when he was young, was working to earn his living playing for the silent movies. So there's a lot of that going on as well. Pure comedy.
Rosamund, for the moment, thank you. And here is tonight's conductor, Antonia Papano, to conduct Acts 1 and 2 of Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk by Dmitri Shostakovich.
Yeah. Latino tara miele c'è narvala I vnur me tata kaya agravat naia Kak te pierdic Arabati kak nos lomnoga Pit gotsa jepat tata ma
Alcei! Bescas jai stava glasa nilzia Народ ненадежный. Что переспеваетесь? Хозяин уезжает, а вы не гости, не гости. Где тут уезжает?
На святой иконе, что мужу будешь верной. Ну, теперь все, прощай, Зиновий, женой простись.
Прощай, Катеринушка, прощай.
Не трогай!
Поезжай. Oh, prima. Già sapeva una cosa che shock. Uppa! Non capire con niente.
Oh, yeah. his voce pugazza etta mea
Cta
sirpes
Che face? Sta me la ferrosa
Dietze, gli sa varite
Papale, dietze
Nat varite Tabias vajou
No, sta me
Prishol kvam, kenish tu Abrasit
Takuyo knishko
Agitat.
Nie tu mnie, Sergej, nikaki knižik.
Skoka, Adalie, Adalie.
Što štim, Helfo?
Na kom, šazja je skajna doč, za mnje nja nje pajot. Na prostih mnie nie miada, mnie obrazowana sio. A ja, człowiek czustrytelny, kwoty skuczaju.
Ja skuczaju.
Jak nie skuczam?
Chodmy, rybiona czekra. Oh, my God.
я, что мужнее жены, как не сравнее обдавались. Зидно ми та порисиш, жену не смог.
Куда я отсюда ба? Не пойду.
Все кардиери запьет.
К доброму молоду. Я к мудрир. А ну,
the end of Act One of Shostakovich's Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk. So Katerina and Sergei have consummated their passion. The orchestra left us in no doubt there about what was happening on stage, as you will realise. And the scene is set for a confrontation between Katerina and Boris, the father-in-law whom she loathes and who has made her life a misery. The passions in this household are bound to explode, and they do. Boris is poisoned by Katerina, the Boris who has whipped Sergei, you will hear that. And then at the climax of Act Two, the returning husband is murdered by Katerina and her manipulative lover, Sergei. The act ends with his body being concealed and the blood-stained Sergei declaring his love for Katerina. Antonio Papano conducts Act Two of Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk.
Thank you. волосы, как заперли. Вот ключ.
Скачи на мельницу. Отыщи сыновья Борисовича. Скажи, чтобы с карьеры возвращался домой. Скажи, грех дома случился. Стой! Жопт меня внутри воды! Принеси!
Не принесу!
Что так ты сказала? Ты смеешь?
Смею!
Смеешь!
Смею!
Что со мной? Thank you.
toi cavarju umrion.
Se od umiraju
je sa
volimja arsa i sena i svjapago.
Thank you. безразлично, лишь весна.
Thank you.
Katerina and Sergei have killed her husband, concealed his body. The tragedy is in full flow. The end of Act Two of Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk by Dmitri Shostakovich in Richard Jones's revived production here at the Royal Opera House, conducted tonight by Antonio Pappano. Katerina is sung by Eva Maria Westbrook. Sergei by the American tenor Brandon Jovanovich in his debut here at the Royal Opera House. And Boris, her father-in-law, is sung by Sir John Tomlinson, who has been singing here for more than 40 years and, of course, is such a great favourite to the audiences at Covent Garden. I'm joined here by Rosamund Bartlett, who is deep in the culture of Russia, literary and musical. And, Rosamund, the fascinating thing about this opera, which is, I suppose, one of the first things that everyone knows about it, is that Stalin went to the opera, one of his rare visits in 1936, hated it, and, as it were, banished Shostakovich for the moment into the outer darkness. Now, what was the reason behind that? What had Shostakovich been trying to do, and why did Stalin object to the way that he did it?
Well, it's a complicated story. When Shostakovich began writing Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk in 1930, Russia was right in the middle of the first five-year plan, which Stalin had launched in 1928. So he brought to an end the new economic policy. It was the end of capitalism, and the program now was rapid industrialization, collectivization, and by 1930, we've got also the Cultural Revolution, and he's harnessing the arts to support this huge initiative.
Because he saw it as one.
Absolutely, and he's putting the country almost back on a sort of wartime footing. This is the time of sort of class war, enemies of the people. So Shostakovich is aware of all that. He's been criticised for his first opera. It was too modern, too experimental.
The Nose.
The Nose. And he's now trying to write an opera which is more accessible. And he's also adapting to the changing times. And at the beginning of the opera, you have a situation in the arts where the proletarian organizations have huge control. They're claiming to speak for the party, and they're becoming very dictatorial. And Shostakovich is someone who is part of the modernist organization. He is supportive of the revolution, but he's also a modernist composer. In 1932, Stalin brings an end to this factionalism. He liquidates all these different artistic organizations and introduces single unions for the arts. And that's in 1932, the end of the opera. So the opera is first performed in 1934. It's a huge success. And then in 1934, that's the year they introduce socialist realism, which is going to be the ideology for all the arts. And it's announced initially for literature. So it takes a while to percolate through to music. So Stalin comes along in 1936. He's been to see a rather weak opera, Quiet Flows the Don by Ivan Dzerzhinsky, which ironically Shostakovich had helped with because it was so weak musically. And that one was an opera that was paraded as an example of socialist realism in music. But Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk, of course, was quite a different opera.
Was original, but that didn't fit the template that Stalin had decided had to be put on the arts.
No, because, of course, there are pictures of tyranny that are going on that didn't suit this new puritanical regime, the sex and violence and satire of the police and all kinds of different elements of satire.
Well, the satire is important, isn't it? Because you can hear in the orchestration the fun that's going on in the midst of a very, very dark story. Katerina and her lover, Sergei, have just murdered her husband, who's come back. Boris has come to a sticky end with the poisoned mushrooms. It's a nightmare story, and yet you can hear in the orchestra all the laughs, all the fun, all the jokes, and, of course, the sex.
Well, yes, and, of course, Shostakovich was a man of extraordinary creativity. He was extremely irreverent, and there's a sort of an anarchic quality that runs throughout this
opera.
And
he was 24 when he started writing it. He was a kid.
He was a kid. He was full of confidence. He knew he was the greatest musical talent in Russia at that time. There was no one else. So he thought he could get away with it. So you get all kinds of inappropriate music in the places where you don't expect it. He, of course, was writing a revolutionary opera, too. There had been this big search for the new Soviet opera. They wanted something that was not going to be linked to the bourgeois past. So, in many ways, this is a revolutionary opera. It sort of rips up the rule book about how to write operas. And Shostakovich, of course, wasn't so aware of how conservative Stalin's musical tastes were.
To put it mildly, the opera in Russian was called Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk District. Now, what's the significance of that nuance, which is usually removed in the English way of saying it?
Well, it's an interesting detail. The opera, of course, is based on a short story novella by Nikolai Liskov from 1865. It's a story set in provincial Russia, merchant life. And there are many ironies contained in the title, because, of course, the Katerina in Leskov's story is no real Lady Macbeth, but particularly because we have Lady Macbeth Mtsenskogo Uyezda. The Uyezd in Russian is the smallest administrative district. So the idea that this sort of grand operatic heroine should come from this very, very small district.
Quite an important little detail.
Yes.
Rosamund Bartlett, thank you very much for the moment. I spoke to tonight's conductor, Antonio Papano, music director here at Covent Garden, about the score of the opera which Shostakovich produced in the early 30s.
I believe this score is, in a Mahlerian sense, the whole world. It has so many different styles of music, from the most lyrical and heartbreaking to the most cynical, ironic, sarcastic music. It has circus, what one would think of circus music. It has vaudeville. It has immense structures like this huge passacaglia, which, of course, affected Benjamin Britten very, very, very much. And I think there's so much Bach in this piece that you have little themes of fugues. Dum da da dum 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 da da dum dum dum. You hear the well-tempered clavier all over it, and somehow creating a life force through the rhythm.
It's interesting you mention a world of the kind that Mahler would have created. And of course, Shostakovich, some people forget this, was obsessed by Mahler. I mean,
absolutely.
He regarded him as, you know, a great mentor.
Like Mahler before him, Shostakovich had the capacity to, with very few notes, create an atmosphere, an immediate state of being that draws audiences in. Also, I think, and this is very, very important, we talk about modern music, you know, and how modern music has developed and has gotten more and more complex. And I believe, like Mahler before him, that a dissonance in the right place and at the right moment has a bigger effect than constant dissonance. And this is what makes the music truly memorable and modern. The thing that strikes you is that despite this piece being written in the 20th century, it is very much a Russian opera, dominated by the sounds of the low cellos and the double basses, and together with that, the bassoons, not only the normal bassoons, but the contrabassoon. We have an armada of percussion, and we have several motoric moments that have a groove that in themselves create theatre, and they're so menacing. But it is the violence in the piece that, on the one hand, shocks you, and because he's able, at the most dramatic turns in the story, to make you also laugh. This black comedy, it's very manipulative, no question about it. The humour is very much like you would experience in a kind of like a film like Goodfellas or something.
Yeah. Where there's a music hall quality.
There's a music hall quality about it. And when something is so extremely uncomfortable and violent that it can be funny.
And yet the characterization is so delicate and so sympathetic when it needs to be.
Well, this is very important because this is the departure that Shostakovich decided on. The story by Leskov, on which the opera is based, makes Katerina much harder. Here in the opera, she gains our sympathy. We understand why she needs to rid herself of her father-in-law, and why she needs to rid herself of her weak husband.
The stifling nature
of her life. The music does boredom very well, by the way. She who wants to taste the honey of life can't. But she makes mistakes. You know, she falls in love with a real manipulative laborer, a real macho, kind of misogynistic, I mean, on the surface, attractive, but he's
the wrong man at the wrong moment.
The wrong man at the wrong moment. It all goes wrong for her, and the way she's treated when she finally ends up in Siberia after she's caught for having taken part in these murders, how she is treated is just something heartbreaking and very uncomfortable to watch, but very, very strong. It's extremely affecting.
Antonio Pappano, tonight's conductor of Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk. Well, let's hear from tonight's principals, talking about their characters in this extraordinary drama. First, Brandon Jovanovich, the American tenor who is singing Sergei, and then we'll hear from Eva Maria Westbrook, tonight's Katerina, a role which she sung around the world and in which she appeared when Richard Jones's production was first seen at Covent Garden in 2006. Brandon Jovanovich.
So the character of Sergei, he's wonderfully multi-layered. There's so many things to him that I love. He's got this devious quality, but there's also this light-hearted sounding in the music, which really goes against who he is, because he's a real manipulative guy. This music that Shostakovich has written, it lies low in the voice where he's at some points, but also he really likes to live up above the Passaggio and drive home in a couple of the rape scenes. For me, every time I've done this a few times with Eva Maria, and we have such a rapport on stage, and it's so wonderful to work with somebody that you feel so comfortable with, because this is a very intimate opera in so many ways. There's a sex scene in the end of scene 3, and it's a very demanding, a very devious scene, and Sergei is such a manipulator. That's the best word I can come up with. He seems like a happy-go-lucky guy, but there's an ulterior motive to everything that he does. She has fallen head over heels for this guy. It becomes painfully obvious at the start of the opera that she's had a very, very bad home life. And Sergei comes in, and he just sweeps her off her feet. And he keeps this need. She longs for him to love her, to be loved. And he uses that right up till the end.
This opera is extremely special. Shostakovich was so young when he wrote it, and I feel that he has such an amazing, amazing insight in the psychology of a woman and of her. And the wonderful thing is I read the original story, and she's absolutely horrendous in that. But he made her very lovable, I think. I mean, she does these horrible things, but you sort of understand because the people around her are horrible. And she's desperate, and then she falls in love with this absolutely wrong man and becomes like an addict to this love. And after the first couple of times that they see each other, he's over her, basically. He doesn't care. He's one of those players. And all she wants is for him to love her. And she does everything to get this man to love her. I think the writing is amazing for the voice. There's some wonderful, wonderful lyric lines in it. A lot of piano singing and a lot of lyricism. And then opposite of that is some very dramatic and sort of almost staccato. Then in the end, it's all very low. It's extremely sad. I find that ninth scene one of the most moving pieces of music I've ever heard, actually. There are two solos, and where she tries to talk to Serioja and ask him, you know, I feel so much better now I see you, and how horrible he is to her. And then she has these beautiful arias. The first one she says, you know, I can deal with everything, but there's one thing I can't bear, and that is seeing Sergei, how he looks at me now, how he hates me now. She can't bear it. And that's very fine written with only almost no orchestra. Yeah, it's wonderful music.
Eva Maria Westbrook, who's singing Katerina in this production. And before that, we heard Brandon Jovanovich, who's singing Sergei, her lover. Rosamund Bartlett is here with me at Covent Garden as we prepare for Acts 3 and 4. Let's recall where we are in the story. Katerina and Sergei, between them, have killed her husband, and he's been stuck in a sort of I suppose it's a kind of closet, really, or a cupboard. And he will be discovered. Just take us through what happens in the next scenes of the opera.
Well, we've got four more scenes, and they are punctuated by two more orchestral interludes, which are interesting because that's something that Shostakovich borrowed from Berg Zwartsek. He wasn't going to abandon modernism altogether. So in the next scene, in scene six, in act three, we have Sergei and Katerina preparing to be married. And this is the scene at which the shabby peasant discovers the body. He goes off to the police.
And the police get very excited because they've got something to uncover.
Yes, and the scene at the police station is a tour de force. It's a scene of pure comedy, hilarious music. And, of course, the police haven't been invited to the wedding and they're delighted to have an excuse to go. And they turn up and arrest Katerina and Sergei. And the last two scenes, of course, are set in Siberia. And Katerina and Sergei have been punished and they're sent into exile. We get to the point of the sticky end because Katerina begins to see that Sergei has lost any affection for her and has gone off to someone else.
It's a desperately sad and bleak story, but you make the point about the orchestration and the comedy involving the police. You know, very familiar, Shakespearean apart from anything else. The bands that we see, we had an onstage band in the second act, and then in the box across from us, where actually we usually sit here in the Royal Opera House, we had the brass booming out. They'll be at the front of the stage again. I mean, Shostakovich used the orchestra in such an imaginative way for operatic performance.
He certainly did, and there's something rather prophetic about it, because that use of brass here and having the brass grouped together in the balcony, of course, immediately brings attention to it. And it makes me think of the way in which he ends his Fifth Symphony, which was the work he wrote to answer the criticisms of this terrible attack on him. Supposedly a work of socialist realism, bright and optimistic, but the brass, of course, is rather sinister. And the brass, of course, is used to very great effect here. There's some kind of dark undertone.
Well, it's dark indeed, because in the last scene, Katerina is drowned and no one wants to save her.
Well, no, she also commits one more murder in the process of it. I didn't want to give the game away completely.
I think we can live with a spoiler.
We can live with a spoiler, all right. She has this extraordinary sort of soliloquy before she commits this last murder, and she grabs Sanyetka, who is Sergei's new love, and plunges them both into the Volga. In the dark, icy waters, of course, the convicts are about to start trudging further forward to Siberia, and that is the moment at which the opera ends.
And the rest is silence. Rosamund Bartlett, thank you very much. And here is Antonio Pappano, bringing the orchestra of the Royal Opera House to its feet, led tonight by Vasco Vasilev, shaking the conductor's hand. Acts 3 and 4 of Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk.
Yeah. Oh, the big Mochilas.
Who is my love?
Who is my love? Ho, ho, ho.
Труп! В погребе!
Прислал Господь!
Gira, 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 gira
Thank you. Ech, mi genie obiad mi, Thank you. yes, yes, adora, adora, adora. Sonietta gioia, bella e mia cera, ma prosigna sabit nie, cara sorriso noi. A protivi rada, a protivi rada, a protivi rada, prestrasna.
Thank you. чулочки не видать, они теперь мои. Видишь, мне теперь тепло.
the end of Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk by Dmitri Shostakovich, coming to you from the Royal Opera House, conducted by Antonio Fapano, the music director of the Royal Opera. A packed house here at Covent Garden, acknowledging, as the curtain comes up, the cast taking their places, the chorus with William Spalding, their chorus master, the second workman in this century, Hubert Francis and Simon Chimbabu, female convict, Miranda Keys. Here's the band coming on now with their instruments. They were adding an extraordinary amount of luster to those final scenes of this very dark opera, which of course, as Rosamund Bartlett was discussing earlier, has so much comedy and so much satire laced into the tragic story which ended with the drowning of Katerina and her rival in that last scene. The priest, Wojciech Gerlach. Sonietka, of course, the rival of Katerina, Igor Lechmetrina. The inspector, Mikhail Svetlov, the old convict, Pater Buchaladze, who's been singing here for so many years. Aksina, Rosie Aldridge. The shabby peasant, Peter Bronda. Zinovi, the husband, done away with earlier in the opera, John Dashak. Oh, and a huge cheer for Sir John Tomlinson. More than 40 years he's been here. His debut was in 1977. A much-loved figure, of course, in operas of all kinds, and has sung Boris here before. Sergei Brandon Jovanovich, the American tenor, who's making his debut here at Covent Garden. Leather-jacketed, of course, a very manipulative figure. And finally, Eva Maria Westbrook, tonight's Katerina, a part which she's made her own around the world, and she sang indeed in that original production in 2006 on this very stage. And she leads the principals to the front of the Royal Opera stage. Eva Maria Westbrook brings onto the stage Antonio Fapano, who brings the Opera House Orchestra, led by Vasko Vasilev, to its feet. After that long and energetic performance of Shostakovich's magnificent score. We do hope you've enjoyed this performance of Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk, coming to you from the Royal Opera House. Our thanks to Rosamund Bartlett here at Covent Garden with me. It's now time to leave the Royal Opera House as the cheers rain down on its stage, and to hand you back to the studio for the rest of the evening on BBC Radio 3.
That was James Naughtie. Next Saturday's Opera on 3 is a performance of Jake Heggie's Dead Man Walking, starring Joyce DiDonato as Sister Helen and Michael Mays as the condemned prisoner Joseph. Mark Wigglesworth conducts the BBC Symphony Orchestra and Singers, and it'll start, as usual, at 6:30 next Saturday evening here on BBC Radio 3. There's more opera too in the Thursday Opera Matinee. This week it's a performance of Rimsky-Korsakov's The Snow Maiden in a production from Moscow's Bolshoi Theatre on Thursday at 2:00 in the afternoon. Here and now, Radio 3's weekly roundup of what's happening in new music around the UK takes you to Max Richter's Sounds and Visions Festival at London's Barbican at 10 this evening. But before that, music to indulge you if you're an Elgar fan. Tomorrow evening at 11:30, you can hear Anthony Payne's completion of Elgar's Symphony No. 3 in a performance by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra. Then on Monday, the BBC Symphony Orchestra and Chorus present Elgar's interpretation of the text by Cardinal Newman that explores the journey of man's soul through death, divine judgment and purgatory, the dream of Gerontius. Well, in anticipation of that Elgar feast, here's music from Sir Edward right now. The composer first sketched out this music for a child's play at the age of 11. 4 decades later, he returned to the themes and orchestrated 2 suites. Here's The Wand of Youth Suite, No. 1. Sound of Youth Suite No. 1 by Elgar, played by the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, conducted by Neville Mariner. Two more Elgar treats to come then over the next couple of nights. Tomorrow evening at 11:30, Anthony Payne's completion of the sketches that Elgar left for his Symphony No. 3 in a performance by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra. And then on Monday, a recording of a concert given by the BBC Symphony Orchestra and chorus of Elgar's Dream of Gerontius, his interpretation of the text by Cardinal Newman, exploring the journey of man's soul through death, divine judgment and purgatory. That oratorio from London's Barbican in concert on BBC Radio 3, Monday evening at 7:30.
Thirty magnificent minutes of music. A mixture of classical favourites. Some forgotten gems. And of course, a few surprises. The In Tune Mixtape, weeknights at 7 on Radio 3, or listen anytime, anywhere on BBC iPlayer Radio.